Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Greetings to all of you listening around the world and a warm welcome as we bring you another edition of the Answers for the Family radio show. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and if you're a regular listener, thank you for joining us once again. Now, if this is your first time, please make yourself at home as we bring you Answers for the Family. Now, each week, this show will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, lasting health, and so much more. Now, having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields and skilled authors who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, you can all do me a big favor. So please, check out some of our past shows at answersforthefamily.com to hear some informative and entertaining guests as well as dynamic co-hosts. They're going to discuss ways for you and your loved ones to become happier, healthier, and more at peace. Now, I'm also looking for some show ambassadors who will forward at least one of our shows to your social media group or to someone you know who can benefit from a particular subject. Now, I want you to know when you hear the subject for today, you'll realize that I think we all know somebody that could benefit from it. Now, I truly appreciate it, and this is just another way that we, together, can make a positive difference in the lives of others. Now, I want to go to the question now that many people are asking. I find now that if at the gym where I go and hang out in the morning sometimes and work on my show, or I've even been in restaurants now, and people have come up and said, "Where in the world is Gabriella?" So with us is our ambassador to kindness, Gabriella Von Rey. Where in the world are you?
Well, I'm in Iowa at the moment. I arrived yesterday from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
So tell us a little bit about what it is you're doing. For those that haven't heard before, share a little bit about your journey and the movement that you have started that is taking the world by storm.
Okay. First of all, I want to thank my manager, Bobby Folsom, for being on your show last week, because I was busy being on stage, and I thought somehow I could get the whole group of students to kind of, you know, say, "Hello, Alan," but it didn't work out. I was in the middle of the talk, and I was already so far into it that I couldn't stop it anymore. So in any case, I'm glad that she got to say where I was at that moment. But for everyone that doesn't know me, I'm the founder of the Dare to Be Kind movement, and we have one goal, one specific goal, to bring awareness to every single human being that kindness is here to stay, and that we can make kindness a choice, a lifestyle. It's just a question of attitudes. And when we shift, or when we have the possibility of just taking the blinders off for one moment, we can truly, truly see the beauty in the other person, which I took that sentence on purpose because I think it will help also the topic that we're talking about today.
Well, I was on Sam's show earlier this morning, and we talked a little bit about reaching new audiences and stuff. And so I hope that some of those have stayed on and are listening now, because they will be a bit of a new audience. So for some of those that haven't heard, one of the things that I've said for many years is that we need more positive TV shows, which is why I'm so excited over the fact that you started one. Now, I'm a firm believer that if we as viewers give our attention, which means our eyeballs or our ears, if we are watching or listening, to shows like yours, it will improve the overall wellness of the world. And if millions of us watch, advertisers will follow. And if advertisers follow, so will networks. So besides watching, what else can all of us out there do to help take us in this direction so that we're all making a positive difference together?
Well, I think, first of all, we all need to understand that we are positive instigators. We're always instigators of something. So the first thing is we would love it if you're interested to help being a kindness instigator in your own 2 mile radius. So anyone that's interested, please connect with us through all the social media or on daretobekindmovement.com and tell us why you're interested in becoming a kindness instigator, and we will help you with tools and how you can be the difference in your 2 mile radius wherever you live in the world. So that's one start. But the other part, which you just said, Alan, you can help us with the TV show, A, by donating, but B, also by being interviewed by me. We're looking for people in the service industry. So anyone that is a teacher, a veteran, people that are first responders, all those kind of professions, whether it's fireman, whether it's a nurse, we need you. We want to talk about you, what you do, and showcase it. So we need more of you. So please reach out to me. In 2 days, I am interviewing a policeman. And here in Eldridge, Illinois, and I'm driving out to meet him on Wednesday. So anyone that's interested, please reach out to me.
Okay. You know, Gabrielle, I think for most people that being a kindness instigator would be easy when things are going well for them. But we all know that right now there is so much negativity out there in the mainstream media and in social media. So many people are out there really trying to promote division and hate. So what are some of the techniques that we can use when we're confronted with this type of hate or anger and be able to turn it around to be that instigator of kindness?
Well, let's remember one thing. That we can truly answer rudeness with kindness. And the way to do that is to understand that it's not about you. The person that is kind of going a little bit off the rails across from you is not actually mad at you. It's not about you. That person is just reacting to something. You might have triggered them. The situation might have triggered them. Stay calm. Just let it all pass and then say, was your day really that bad? Because I'm hearing it. By doing that, you're diffusing something, because often we don't hear that our tone is really snippy. And so by doing that, we suddenly laugh at ourselves and say, was it that bad? I'm so sorry. You know, like that. And that really, really helps. This is something you can do immediately in your own life on a daily basis.
Well, and I think that's a great tip. And again, I'm just so thankful. I just really want to acknowledge you for everything that you're doing. And for everybody out there, I mean, think about making a decision in your life to drop everything and move out of your home and decide for the next 2 years that you're going to travel from city to city, spreading a message that you know is going to be beneficial to all of us. So again, Gabriella, thank you so much for that. It is much appreciated.
Thank you. But you know what? I got to make sure that all the new listeners know this too, Alan. You and I are almost doing the same work. Yours is you on a, I do not know the English expression, at a drop of a hat. That's what I was looking for. At a drop of a hat. You go and help to find a runaway teen, which is pretty dramatic. So could you tell just a listener a little bit? Because I know I've had the privilege that you explained to me how something like that works. But maybe a new listener doesn't really know how intensive this is.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate that. And I think probably the best way to touch on that is just to kind of go back to the way I got started. And I got started as a young investigator. And as a young investigator, some of the first cases I dealt with were locating teens. And some of those teens I found were being exploited into human trafficking. And once I realized that these were young people that thought that they were getting away from what they thought was a difficult situation, not realizing that they were finding something much, much worse. So at that point in time, I saw that as my calling. So, you know, as an investigator, although I've done many different things, I think our focus has always been something as it relates to helping at-risk youth, be it locating them or be it, you know, therapeutically transporting them to a specialized program where they can get some help rather than ending up in jail or in juvenile hall where, unfortunately, in many cases, just teaches somebody how to be a better criminal. But anyway, so yes, it is a passion of mine. It's something that I will always do. Every time I'm talking to somebody about some new thing that I'm involved in, like, you know, 10 years ago when I started doing the radio show and somebody said, oh, well, now that you're doing radio, you probably won't be, you know, doing these other things. And I said, you know, I'll always be doing these other things because that's where my passion is. And that's one of the ways in which I feel I can make a difference. So okay. Thank you for that. And I want to use that to sort of lead into our guest, because one of the things that we found when we would locate some of these teens is they're dealing with a lot of issues, many of which are psychological, but yet they show them in different ways, and sometimes it's in very physical ways. Well, today I'm very fortunate, you know, to be able to talk to someone, you know, that's an award-winning speaker, and to talking about eating disorders. Our award-winning speaker is also an educator, a coach, and she is Dana Sukow, and she is someone who overcame bulimia herself. She overcame binge eating disorder and exercise compulsion that resulted in permanent injury to her body. Now, since that time, she's become an expert in the field of body image and eating disorder prevention. In 2012, Dana was going a little different direction, so she had founded the DoTheHotPants.com as a fashion blog. But once she realized that fashion's unattainable beauty standards were fueling her eating disorder, Dana made the decision to leave the industry and focus on eating disorder prevention and activism. In 2014, she founded the hashtag MyBodyStory, which is an ongoing storytelling series created to uplift girls' and women's voices that so often go unheard. In 2018, Dana was awarded the Girl Up hashtag Girl Hero Award by This Is Us star and activist Chrissy Metz. Dana now lives in New York City, and she holds a master's degree in creative writing from San Francisco University. You can find her on Good Morning America, The Oprah Winfrey Network, Vogue, Huffington Post, Yahoo, Elle, 17 Magazine, and so much more. But what I'm most happy is that she's here with us now. So, Dana, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for that wonderful introduction. It's so interesting hearing people kind of, you know, go over your bio, because sometimes I forget, you know, how long I've been doing this, and I still get nervous and anxious about, you know, speaking on the radio or speaking to people. It's still so exciting, and I forget I've been doing it for, you know, 5-6 years. So thank you. I'm very flattered to be here.
Well, one of the things that I'm happy to bring to everybody on this show is the fact that we're able to talk about a lot of subjects, and a lot of subjects that for whatever reason aren't getting the attention that they need in the mainstream media. And I mean, there's a variety of different reasons. You know, when I talk to people about it, I talk to many people when I'm going to do a show. I ask questions so that I can get intelligent questions to ask you. And it's interesting, some of the answers that that people have given me. So I want to share some of those with you to see if this is your feeling as well. One of the things that I heard was, oh, well, you probably don't hear a lot about this because of the powerful food lobby that wants to make sure that we have these problems. Or somebody else said it's a conspiracy between the food lobby and big medical and big pharma, because it creates so many problems out there. And those same people, big medical and big pharma and big food, are all huge advertisers on mainstream media. So if mainstream media goes against those things, are they then cutting off their own income stream to actually focus mm-hmm. on what helps people? So with mm-hmm. with that thought in mind, what do you think?
I mean, I agree. You know, I absolutely agree. I think it's a lot deeper, and I think we have to, there's a lot of systemic problems that are coming around body image. I mean, I think if you just look at the core of it, you know, I like to tell people, you know, when you have a thought about disliking your body, who's profiting from that thought? And we really have to look at it from a systemic, holistic perspective of all of these thoughts about you hating your body and about you not being good enough. Those were created by advertisers to make you feel that you need a product. Because if everyone in the world started loving themselves and loving their bodies, imagine the amount of industry that would go out of business. And, you know, we have to look again at media and advertising and marketing. I 100% believe that, you know, the idea of us being told, you know, not only that we're not good enough, but constantly being sold high sugar, high processed, high fat, you know, all of these foods, which I don't use the language good food, bad food. I think that is it's not helpful in the way that we are trying to remove shame from bodies and from body image. But I will say that there are foods out there that are being marketed to people that, you know, there's billions of dollars being spent to tell you to eat those foods. And, you know, if we look at how human brains work, if we are dieting all the time, we are going to be starving for high fat, high sugar, high oil, high calorie foods because we think we're in a food drought. So there's so much at work. And, you know, another part of it is just looking at the history of advertising. You know, I think it was Charles Darwin's brother who helped found modern marketing. So you have this whole, you know, system in place to market to you. And that was, you know, helped founded by someone who was literally understanding brains and understanding how humans work. So it's very hard to be looking at media and be receiving media all the time and then to really be at the same time making healthful, conscious decisions because your brain has been so manipulated. So yes, I mean, I agree completely with your readers with saying, you know, big pharma, big food, you know, and again, to look at the healthcare industry, you know, we have doctors prescribing eating disorders to plus size patients and teens. And we really have a lot of misinformation and miseducation that's just happening system wide. And so no wonder we have people hating their bodies because we are all victims of diet culture.
And can I ask you, Dana, would you say that young girls are more susceptible to that? Or would you say this is not even gender anymore? It's everyone.
Yeah, great question. You know, I think I wouldn't say that young girls are more susceptible. I would say that young girls have been targeted more. I would say that women have been targeted more for centuries. For a very long time, women's bodies have been told that, you know, women have been dehumanized in media and advertising. Now, you have to look at marketing as well in a if companies aren't growing, they're dying. So if companies over the years aren't making more money, they're dying. So there's only so much with women and girls you can tell that to hate their bodies. You know, we're already told every single inch of our body needs some sort of fixing. So of course you have these brands and these corporations that are going to say, well, what other bodies can we target? Well, now we can start targeting men's bodies. So now you have boys and men thinking they need six packs. You have them getting injections and Botox, you know, in an increasing rate. We have men getting laser hair removal. We have men getting plastic surgery. So it's, you know, I think we have to look and say, yes, women have been disproportionately targeted, but that doesn't mean that men and boys are now not being targeted. So we do have to look at it, and, you know, we have to look at it for both genders, of course.
But you see that it was only, I think, 3 days ago, someone brought it to my attention that a governor from a state, I am so sorry that I do not know which state, was literally attacked on social media because they were saying that her dress was maybe too tight or too revealing. And the comments below were absolutely horrific. Mm-hmm. And when mm-hmm. you are a man, and that's, I think, why I'm asking gender-based, because mm-hmm. when you are a man, nobody really cares the tie you are wearing. And Alan, mm-hmm. please tell me if I'm wrong, because you are the man here, and we're the ladies.
Well, but I think it's one of those things in which, you know, when people talk about, you know, various types of equality and stuff, and unfortunately, I agree that men, or in this case, boys, are being, you know, equally exploited, you know, mm-hmm. for big corporations to be able to make more money by trying mm-hmm. to affect a mindset that we're not good enough, that we either right. are not yep. physically good enough right. or, you know, whatever it may be. It's this constant bombardment of it's not good mm-hmm. enough. And the reality of it is that we are good enough. You know, male, right. female, you know, male, female, black, white, different religions or whatever, we are good enough. And what we need is we need to have that promoted. And unfortunately, between big politics and big corporations, mm-hmm. that doesn't make them money or keep them in power. So the negativity of almost everything is forced upon us.
Right. True. Right. I mean, if you just look at the diet industry, which includes diet foods, it includes gym memberships. I mean, that's a $66 billion a year industry, and I'm sure it's gone up since the last time I checked the statistics. So, again, we have it, everywhere you look is trying to profit off of your insecurities, and that's why, you know, the core of the work that I do. So I don't work with children, and I you know, sometimes I do go speak in schools, but my passion is helping adults have the tools to protect their children. Mm-hmm. And the main message that I tell them all the time is that children need to know they're good enough, they're loved, and they're accepted just as they are. And if we can have children start believing that, it makes it harder for the toxic messages that they're exposed to every single day to get through.
How does the eating disorder get started? I mean, what age? Tell us more about that.
I mean, it's so vague. You know, we have eating disorders. You know, I got my eating disorder when I was 26 years old. That doesn't mean that as a child I didn't hate my body and I wasn't insecure and, you know, the groundwork wasn't laid for it to happen at 26. But, you know, we also have reports of children as young as 5 saying that they would rather lose a parent than get fat. So it's not an age-specific thing. It's happening younger and younger. And there's a lot of different ways. You know, the majority of eating disorders really start from deprivation, from dieting, from your body believing that it is in a food drought. And because we have younger and younger ages dieting, we're seeing eating disorders in younger and younger, you know, children and patients. That being said, there's also people who have been sexually assaulted who develop eating disorders. There is also people who have, you know, really severe mental illnesses, and eating disorders come out of that. So it's, and I think that that's what makes it sort of difficult to pinpoint and say, okay, this is why now we can fix it. Because there's a lot of different reasons. But at the end of the day, where my focus is preventing dieting and diet culture from affecting children and giving parents the tools to, you know, protect kids, to at least prevent that portion of eating disorders starting.
So, Dana, and believe me, I am not a believer in fad diets, you know, and I believe that it's more about eating clean and healthy. But mm-hmm. when you have parents, and there are parents out there now, you know, that have that, you know, that teen or preteen that's, you know, that's in their bedroom, they're, you know, they're 60 pounds overweight, they're mm-hmm. not going to school, there's pizza boxes under their bed, and they're sitting there playing mm-hmm. video games and watching TV. So, mm-hmm. you know, and I know there's a multitude of diets out there, you know, that they make all these claims of quick weight loss and things like that. But what would you say to that parent in how they can affect that child and be able to start mm-hmm. them on the road to recovery?
Right. Great question. And so I do want to, there's a couple things that in your question that you said, and I just, from where I teach and from where I come from, the term overweight, I usually try not to use that term because that term kind of says that everyone has a weight they're supposed to be, and that we can tell someone's health by looking at them. And I think really if we look at the history of humanity and we look at different cultures, you know, different people are supposed to be at different weights. And look, if you look at beauty, you know, Renaissance paintings hundreds of years ago, you know, all those women were plus size and they would be considered fat or overweight now. So we really have to kind of look at, I think the deeper part of it is that, you know, we're looking at health from the inside, not from a weight standpoint, because weight doesn't mean, it doesn't mean health. It doesn't, you know, thinness doesn't equal healthy. But that being said, look, I get it. Like, I want parents to know, like, it's not easy. I get it. I understand that you have so many messages being told to you constantly, but how are we supposed to know what's wrong and what's right, and how are we supposed to know how to talk to kids about bodies? So I think it's kind of understanding that your child needs to know that you love them no matter what, and no matter what their body looks like. And it's not about restricting food. You know, it's about changing, you know, the idea of exercise. Instead of exercising to lose weight, let's exercise to get stress out. Let's exercise to, you know, build healthy cell, brain, heart, lung function. Let's exercise to get team building skills. Let's exercise to develop social skills and meet people. And so it's getting kids excited about movement, finding something they like. You know, not all kids like playing football, not all kids like doing ballet, and it's about doing small changes. And, you know, maybe it's not having the kid eat in their room. Maybe you eat as you know, a family together. Maybe you cook together. Maybe you do activities together. You know, and make sure that your child is consuming diverse media. You know, what are the types of bodies that they're looking at? You know, the example you gave me was a kid who is playing video games. Are they only looking at muscular, you know, unattainable body ideals 24/7 or, you know, 18 hours a day? It's really making sure that your kids can start seeing themselves represented, that they're finding role models that not only look like them, but look diverse from the majority of people they're seeing. You know, there's so many things to do, but at the end of the day, whether or not you want your child to lose weight or your child needs to lose weight, shame doesn't work. And so we really need to get out of making someone feel bad for who they are, making someone feel unloved for who they are, and really at the end of the day going, I love you no matter what. Now let's go move and develop some social skills.
Well, yeah. Now you brought up a good point in regards to exercise. And this is actually a question that I've had a parent ask me as well. And, you know, so how does the parent talk to their kids about exercise without it coming off as sounding like body shaming?
Right. Right. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I mean, look, it's also hard to not do that because we have gyms saying, you know, get your new body, or, you know, covers of magazines after a celebrity has a baby, they got their body back. This language that your body is something that needs to be manipulated and squeezed and, you know, stretched, and it's out of control. And so I understand that it's hard to find language about exercise and movement that is not about changing bodies. But, you know, when I'm talking to people, really the key parts to exercise is let's focus on the insides, not the outsides. You know, movement shouldn't be about changing bodies. It should be about changing hearts and minds. So, you know, some really great non-body-based benefits of movement are it releases stress, it boosts your mood, it produces endorphins. Your kids, again, learn team building, problem solving, social skills, build strong bones, heart, lung. You know, another thing, too, is bonding with family. Animals or nature. You know, if a kid's out gardening, they're getting in touch with the soil. If your kid loves animals, have them go volunteer at a shelter, or, you know, brush the neighbor's dog. Or if, you know, the family likes going for hikes or you know, picnics or something together, there's ways to find it that aren't all about calories in, calories out. And I think we really have got to start reframing, you know, exercise and movement in a much more healthy way.
I love the examples you gave for the parents. I think they will like that too. As a parent, I like that you just said simple picnics and just being together.
Right.
The moment the children and the parents together relax, I think that in itself, you just said, it will release all the endorphins. But having said that, and being the parent of a child that's now grown up, but how does social media play into the negativity of my child, right? Let's say that I did everything you just told me. I boosted him or her back up, and I know that I'm sending a happy child back to school on Monday. Then they come back, and I know that they are upset because you're their parent, and you see it by the body language that they have when they come in, and by not answering, and they're totally sulky because they've seen social media or people have posted things about them. So how can we help on that level we're not so good at?
So social media, so I talk a lot about social media because I'm very active on social media. Social media is a huge factor in body image. And I really tell parents, you know, either delay a child's access to social media and smartphones as long as possible, or if you have a child that is on social media, you need to see who they're following. You need to see how much time they're spending on it. And there are really wonderful parenting apps that you can download on a child's phone that will set up, you know, screen time allowances, or, you know, will be careful on what apps they use or that they can download. But on top of that, you know, at the end of the day, social media is everyone's highlight reel. People are putting their best life, their best face, their best foot forward on social media. You hardly get anybody being vulnerable. Anyone saying, this is what I look like without makeup. This is what I look like today. You know, I didn't brush my teeth. I didn't wash my hair. Or I'm really depressed. I don't feel great about myself. You know, we have people taking 100 selfies before they put their favorite one on. And their favorite one on has still gone through an app. It has still been face-tuned. It's still been Photoshopped. And so the problem with social media is that children and teens are spending so much time on it that they are getting a very skewed view of what is real. And they're getting a very incorrect view of what is actually, what someone's life and existence is actually supposed to look like. So I'm coming, the experience I have is I was a fashion blogger. I used to put Photoshopped images of myself looking so happy, so wonderful online. And at the end of the day, after I posted those photos, you know what I was doing in bed at home? I was crying. I was sobbing because I hated myself. And I ended up creating this false, creation of me that didn't even exist. And yet my followers thought I had a perfect body and a perfect life. And so I really think, go ahead.
Is that like a false mirror of who we are? Is that what you're describing?
Yeah, maybe not a false mirror, but maybe, are who we wish we were.
Yeah, gotcha.
You know, I think we're putting our ideal body, our ideal life, and I think it's really hard for parents because we now have these parenting blogs, these, mommy Instagrams, and everybody looks perfect and you're not getting the backstory or the reality or, you're not seeing the parent crying at night because they're so frustrated or upset. And that's where, with children, you really have to have discussions about that what they're seeing is not real, that what they're seeing is a creation, is a curated image of someone's life. And on top of that, it's really making sure your children aren't following, the Kardashians, that they're not following, Instagram models or people that they wish their bodies looked like, and that they're following diverse people, that they're following a range of body types and a range of ages and a range of whatever. But you want your children, when they're looking online, that they're seeing the same bodies as if they looked outside.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, okay, we're going to take a break, but and for everybody out there, if you want to follow along, you can go also to Dana's website, which is www.dana.com. Sucuch, which is spelt DanaSuchow.com. Now, if you're driving, obviously don't try to take this down, but we will have all of this information on the Answers for the Family site that you can get it as well. You can, if you're at home, you can open up another window. You can pull up the site. There's lots of incredible information there. But we're going to take a break. When we come back, Dana, I've got a question for you, but I'll pose it now. And if you could make three changes in our society to combat eating disorders, what would they be? Hold that thought.
Good one.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. You're listening to Answers for the Family.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service, licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services and Westshield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family. Our topic today is eating disorders, and our guest is award-winning speaker, educator, and coach, Dana Sucuch. So, Dana, before we went to break, I had asked you a question. If you could make three changes in our society to combat eating disorders, what would they be?
Really, such a great question. And there was one thing I wanted to say before we got off. I was talking about, you know, parents finding diverse media for their kids. I actually have put together a resource page on my website that is absolutely free, and it has movies and documentaries that you can watch with your kids to learn about body image. It has great podcasts that talk about this, but it also has age-appropriate reading lists for body-positive books. But also, it has social media accounts that are diverse that people and families can follow. And so if you just go to my website, danasuchow.com/resources, there's a plethora of information that people can use to kind of follow up on the conversation we're having today, and it's absolutely free. So I just wanted to just put that out there if anyone is feeling like they want to take the next steps.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course. So, again, three changes to society to prevent eating disorders. I mean, it's funny because I started thinking about it, and I think I got to about 10 just while we were on break. But, you know, I think there's definitely three really big ones. And my first one is I would remove the beauty industry and sort of the body beauty industry or machine, as I would call it, that really just tells us that we're not good enough, that is advertisement saying that you need to change your body. And I would get rid of that. I would remove it. And it sounds huge, but if we didn't have messages telling us every single day that we aren't good enough just as we are, I imagine what a world that would be. And so that would be really my first big one, is get rid of just the industry that is profiting off of our insecurities as well as creating those insecurities. The second one is, gender equality and women's equal pay, because I do believe that money is power in the society that we're living in. And so if we have women who are not only making the same amount of money, but being treated fairly, if we're getting rid of gender-based violence and all of those sort of things, we're really creating a world that is safe for women and safe for young girls, and safe for young girls to be who they are and realize that they are more than their bodies, and that they don't need to be sexy, beautiful, tall, blonde, young, you know, all of these things to be valued and loved. The third thing that I would change would be our food system. And less about, you know, Doritos and Pepsi and all of these sort of brands that really are just paying billions of dollars a year, and not just to get you to eat foods, but also lobbying the government and the FDA to allow these foods in schools and to allow these foods to be, you know, considered in the food pyramid. But beyond that, the food system I would change would really be accessibility to food. You know, we have food deserts all over the country where people do not have access to, granted, clean water, but don't have access to fruits and vegetables. They don't have access to things other than fast food or big chains like TJ Maxx, Walmart, Target, and that's where people are getting food. So we have so much of our country is just, the only access they have is processed food, is hyper-processed food. And that's not their fault. That is, you know, big food. That is the industry's fault. And so I would really change that to give everyone equal access to food and to fruits and vegetables and affordable. You know, I feel like I've been going on for a long time, but there's just one other thing I want to touch on is, you know, we have to kind of look at the class issue of food accessibility also. You know, if you are trying to feed a family of four on food stamps, you're not going to be buying fruits and vegetables because those are not, or maybe you will, but you're not going to be going towards, you know, feeding your family a salad because that's not dense. That does not, is not a lot of calories. It's going to go bad quickly. So you're going to really be looking for calorie-rich, dense foods to feed families. And so we really can't shame people on what they're feeding families when they're just trying to keep people alive and they're just trying to keep their families alive. So that would be a huge, you know, system change that I would want to see.
And just, let me just add to that before we go into the next question. And that is, now for everybody that's out there, understand that you are voters, you are people that can make a difference. And one of the ways in which you can make a difference is, you know, think about the politicians that you vote into office. If you mm-hmm. if you have somebody who's out there and they are big about giving, you know, giving tax cuts or whatever to giant food conglomerates, and not funneling money in to help the small business person who has mm-hmm. an organic farm that is trying mm-hmm. to keep that food cost effective. Yeah. If we can flip this, I mean, think about it in our schools and everything else. If we can have accessible, healthy food, then these people in those situations that Dana just talked about, if you're on a limited budget, you're going to buy that thing that's going to fill the void. If we can have our tax dollars go towards filling that void with something healthier, and now a politician or somebody may say, well, wait a minute, you know, that's just going to raise taxes or whatever. No, really, if you think about it, because now if we have healthier people, we're spending less money on healthcare and everything else. So look at the big picture and think about the politicians that are out there. Who are they giving the money to? And if you don't like it, show it with your vote.
Yeah. Oh, thank you so much for adding that. I really appreciate that. And it's so true. And, you know, look, I just think, imagine if public schools taught gardening, you know, imagine if kids of all class levels had access to, you know, yoga teachers coming in and mindfulness and meditation. And, you know, I think that we really need to be exactly what you're saying, like voting for people who are really putting kids first and are not putting big pharma and are not putting big food corporations and lobbyists first. And again, it takes research. And I know that, you know, with everything going on in the world, sometimes we just want to shut it off. But I think especially when it comes to voting, it's follow the money trail, follow where it's going. And are these people really caring about you and your family and especially the next generation of kids?
Absolutely. I love that both of you said that. I just want to add something, Dana, is on, I agree so much with you on the accessibility of food. Being mm-hmm. on the road, on the world tour, I have already done many states, and you know what? This is not my first tour. There are moments that I can't access anything else except McDonald's. Right. It's like, And people don't believe me when I say this, and that I go into gas station and there is No carrots, no nothing. There is just nothing. If I get a yogurt, I'm lucky. And so when you are on the road nonstop, I have, I mean, you, when you said Target and Walmart, you are absolutely right. I just wanted to let the listener know that it's really true. And we kind of condone it, right? I meant we kind of say, well, it's your fault that you're not getting to it.
Yeah, we definitely victim blame. We victim blame, and I think that a lot of people are, it's, you know, we have such a culture of pick yourself up by the bootstraps, and we kind of have to remember that not everyone has boots to begin with, but also that we have a system that didn't give everyone boots, and so to really expect people to fix themselves when they don't even have access, when they aren't even receiving equal pay, when there's so much to it. And again, this is, it's in the grand scheme of things, it's to keep us focused on fighting each other instead of really making wide sweeping change, because we're so angry at the other person for not changing and not being able to pick themselves up by the bootstraps.
Absolutely. Alan, do you want to ask the question?
You go ahead.
Okay. I'm just so curious about something, Dana. I feel like we didn't touch at all on your personal story, and that's the part that interests me. And so I know this work is really important to you because of what you went through yourself. Is there anything you want to kind of reveal that we wouldn't know about you, and why this work is so passionately important to you?
Yeah, thank you so much for asking that. I really appreciate that. And, you know, I think Alan kind of touched on it in the beginning, you know, kind of talking about my bio a little bit. But, you know, really just, I got my eating disorder. And when I got it, I thought I was absolutely alone. I thought no one else in the world hated themselves as much as I did. No one else had food issues like I did. And over the years, you know, as I learned, as I came to realize, you know, just how prevalent and just how widespread eating disorders are, and not just eating disorders, but self-hate, just how widespread self-hate is, I was like, I'm not alone. And that really helped me in my recovery. And so again, over the years through my recovery, I started going, well, what, how can I help people? How can I use what I've learned over the years and help others? And I started realizing, you know, if I look back on when I was a child, what did I need the most? And I think what I needed was for the parents, the teachers, the caregivers, the adults around me to know how to talk about food, body, to know how to make me feel loved in the way I need it. And so that's been, you know, that's why I work with parents, teachers, caregivers. That's why I work with adults, because I think, you know, I think it's wonderful. We have a lot of organizations and a lot of people working with kids and teens. I think that's absolutely important. You know, they're going into schools or doing workshops for teens on how to love themselves, how to have media literacy and be aware of media's messages. But at the end of the day, if a child is going home to a family that is body shaming them and making fun of them, or if a child is at school that is measuring their BMI and is making them feel bad, or they're getting body bullied by classmates, that child becomes completely disempowered again. And so I think we have to be working. It's got to be a holistic thing where we're working with not just the kids, but the people around them, raising them. And it's got to be like a team effort. And so that's really that's where my passion is. And I, until the day I die, I'm going to be working to protect children from not feeling good enough.
Yeah. I hear you. I absolutely hear you. But our listeners have some questions here, and I would love to give you one. Okay. Yes. A middle school teacher says, I see so many young girls obsessed with their look and their weight. We are trying to talk more about self-esteem and eating a healthy diet, but too often it seems to be falling on deaf ears. I feel like we need to be getting them much earlier. What do you think?
Oh, yes. I mean, definitely much earlier, of course. That being said, so, you know, I think saying, yes, we need to get them much earlier isn't helping this teacher. It's going to help this teacher in 5 years when she gets the next generation of kids. But for this teacher in this school, you know, again, focusing on self-esteem, yes. Focusing on eating healthy, no. I don't believe that focusing on healthy eating, because we are told 24/7 that we should be eating healthy, and it's not working. And so when we talk about, you know, healthy, at the end of the day, you know, a bowl of pasta is healthy. At the end of the day, a bag of chips that still has salt and carbs and oils and fats that your body needs can still be healthy. And so we have to look at, you know, what is healthy and what is not. And so I stay away from that and really go to the root of it, of children not feeling good enough. Because if you can get to that, and if you can make kids feel good enough and beautiful and wonderful just as they are, you'll start seeing the layers of protection, like makeup or dieting, start to fall away. Because children will actually realize that they're valued, they're worthy, and they are accepted just as they are. And they don't need those things. But to shame a child for putting on makeup and for, you know, again, we have to remember that children are victims here. And it's not vanity. It is not about kids thinking that, you know, it's about kids being told over and over again that they need this to be beautiful and accepted. And so it's, you have to get to the root of it, not be putting Band-Aids on top of everything. And the root is that children need to know they are loved and beautiful and accepted just as they are.
You know, Dana Gabriella, I got to tell you, this has been going so well that completely lost track of time. We need to go. I'd love to have you back. I think there's so much more that we can touch on in regards to this. Mm-hmm. So we'll have you get together with Jan and she'll set it up. So for everybody out there, not only do you want to share this with somebody that you know that can benefit from it, but keep listening because we're going to try to have Dana back. Dana, thank you so much. And for
thank you.
Well, both of you. I just really want to acknowledge
Gabriella, thank you.
Yeah, and both of you. I just want to acknowledge both of you for really making a positive difference in the lives of others. And you know, that's part of the tribe that I think we belong to. We just need to get a whole lot of other people to join the tribe.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and just, you know, to finish up, I love what you said in the beginning, you know, when you were talking about your own story, Alan, of just finding your calling. I think it sounds like the three of us have found our calling, and I love that, and I think it's absolutely beautiful that we've found our calling and we're helping kids, but we're doing it in different ways that we know best. And I just think that it's absolutely beautiful.
All right. And Gabriella, while you're out there touring, check and see if you can find some of Kimball Musk. This is Elon Musk's brother. He's setting up stores throughout the country. I believe they're called Big Green or The Kitchen. Okay. And his goal is to make it cost-effective, healthy food for everybody.
Amazing.
Yes. Fantastic. So, and for everybody out there, look it up, try it. You know, the more you can help a group like that, the less, you know, the more focus, again, advertisers are going to go to him instead of to other people. So,
And Dana, I wish I had met you last week. No, 10 days ago in New York. I was in NYC.
Oh, well, next time you're here, we'll definitely meet up. And, you know, just to put it out to any reader or any listeners, if anybody, I'm on social media, I'm on, just search Dana Sukow. If you have any questions, reach out. I'm here, and this is my passion, and I want to talk to people about it.
Okay.
That's great. And for everybody out there, please be sure to put us on your calendar to tune in next Monday when we're going to be discussing a new book called Caring for Children Who Have Been Abused, Neglected, or Abandoned. All right, so check that out for everybody. Be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers for the Family.
Thank you.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.